Thank you, microdose.com. That's all I have to say right now. I have been traveling so much, planes, cars, like long, long drives. My body hurts, you know, sleeping in different beds, in different hotels, you know, everything's kind of screwy. And thank you, microdose.com. I know you've heard the word microdose before, but this is microdosing THC. And microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And you deserve to feel good. You can go to their website, microdose.com, and learn all about microdosing THC. But I'm telling you, it is amazing. They have all different strains that help with all different issues. A friend of mine just sent me a photo of her with her order from microdose.com saying thank you. I'm telling you, a lot of people do this, all sorts of people. And they do it to feel healthier. They do it to perform better. They do it to focus. They do it to sleep. They do it for pain. They do it for relaxation. It really helps your mind and body be at peace. So really check it out. Microdose.com is amazing. And the product, they taste delicious, number one. But the product is so damn good. And you deserve to feel better. So what are you going to do? You're going to go to microdose.com. If you don't already know, you're going to learn about microdosing THC. And when you get there, you're going to get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code Judy Gold. It is available nationwide. That is microdose.com, promo code Judy Gold, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, for 30% off and free shipping. That is a lot, 30% off. And the stuff is amazing. I'm telling you, microdose.com, promo code Judy Gold. You're welcome.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer. Let's bring her out. A star attraction. The one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what to say. I know that you're going to be shocked that this is my guest. Because you don't know how fucking cool I am. You think I only hang out with comics and the glitterati and, you know, really intellectual people, Pulitzer Prize winners. No. I have other people I know in this business and they're straight. They're male.
Yeah.
They're fucking like girls go crazy over them.
Eh.
Or used to. They're really talented. They're fun, and I did a cooking show with, well, we'll get into that. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, Joey Fatone is here!
What's up, Jenny? Woo!
Joey Fatone in sync, yeah! Joey Fatone in sync.
Judy Gold. Judy Gold.
Joey Fatone.
How are you doing, sweetheart?
I'm doing well. I mean, look, I was waiting for you for a fucking half hour because your shitty manager, Joe.
That is, I will, you know what? He takes full responsibility. I blame both of us for that because it is on the calendar and I got sidetracked with other shit that was on top of it. And he calls me and goes, we fucking fucked up big time. And I was like, what happened? She goes, hello, we're supposed to do Judy. And I went, shit. And I literally stopped everything.
Oh, you curse? That's terrible. All right.
I do. Boy banders do curse sometimes.
Motherfucker. All right. So, Joey, we're going to talk about your very important life. And
so important.
It is. You're so cute. I fucking love you. Anyway.
So important. So fucking important.
So, Joey, you were born in Brooklyn. So I know you haven't listened to my podcast. So I have a thing called the Jew Bell.
Okay.
Anything remotely Jewish gets a ring. So since you're born
beautiful.
In Brooklyn.
Okay, well, that is pretty much remotely Jewish.
Yes.
It was
yes.
I lived in Brooklyn, Bensonhurst, where all it was Italians and Jews. That's it.
Right.
Italians and Jews.
I grew up in New Jersey, all Italians and Jews. And they're the fucking same thing, except you have better food. That's the only
No. There was a couple places I went to, a couple of delicatessens and places I know there was many places I went to that were Jewish, so I don't know.
Okay, I know they're delis, but they're not fucking lasagna.
No, but you had knishes are good, though. Some people don't know what knishes are either.
Yeah, but there's two kinds of knishes, Joey.
There's that flat one you get at the fucking baseball game that's greasy and sucky. And then there's the big fucking stuffed knish.
Mound stuffed, yeah.
And, all right, what do you put on your knish?
You know what? I eat a plain Jane. I know people put mustard on it and stuff. I eat a fucking plain Jane. I do.
You know what I put on?
What?
Russian dressing and mustard. Yeah. And
nice.
Mustard. Yeah. I'm a Jew.
There's nothing wrong with that, though.
Thank you.
I'm the same way with pretzels, though. I don't put mustard on pretzels either.
You don't?
Plain. I'm just plain. I don't know.
Okay. What do you put on your hot dog?
Ketchup.
Oh, my God. Are you fucking kidding me? My kids do that. And I'm like,
and the ones that snap good is Hebrew National, of course.
Yeah.
Hebrew National is a good one. Yep.
Okay. No one, ketchup is not, it's supposed to be on a fucking hamburger.
I know it's an insult to all shit, but I happen to like it. I'm not a very good mustard person.
All right,
very
whatever.
Rarely do I put mustard on
that's
shit.
That's because you're Italian, you like the red sauce. Okay. Exactly. Anyway, all right. So your parents, Joe and Phyllis.
Phyllis, you got it. Yep. Grew up in the middle, like I say, middle range of the world, I guess. And I lived literally in a middle family three brownstone house. I was in the middle floor.
You did? You lived in the middle of it?
My mother was a server. Actually had a bunch of the play. Actually had a Jewish one of the convention halls.
So
all the big parties.
That's so great.
Yeah, and then my dad was a cable splicer in New York City. He did a lot of stuff.
That is so funny. So wait, so you did she like the Jews, your mother?
Oh yeah, she liked it, of course. I love going there sometimes when nobody was home. I'd actually have to go over there and sit there and wait for my mom to be done with work. And I remember that they used to have all the freaking pickles and shit. And I used to just sit back there and shove hot
dogs.
Were they
like, oh, look at Joey, he's so cute. Oh my God. All right. So you have a brother and a sister.
Yep, Steve and Janine. I'm the baby.
Steve and Janine. What did they do? What does Steve and Janine do?
My brother he's right now, of course, not working because of the whole COVID crap.
What?
But he's actually a video director. He started out doing a lot of tech work on tour with me. He was actually a videographer for NSYNC for a while. Right. Then he became a video camera operator and then became the video director. He was doing he's done NSYNC, he's done No Doubt, Stones, Britney.
Wow.
New Kids on the Block. They've done Backstreet. He's been doing now Bruno and Lady Gaga. He's been one he's been doing.
That's
all the
amazing.
Videos
and what about Janine?
My sister, she likes to sing. She does more karaoke. She's more of a little bit laid back life, but she has a voice and she's loud as shit.
And your father sang, right? He was in a doo-wop group.
My father was in a group called the Orions. Not a very popular group back then, but that's how I got influenced.
So you're living in this. Did you have your own bedroom?
No, me and my brother shared one. Oh, hell no. Yeah, me and him shared until I was about 17, until I moved to when I went to NSYNC.
Wow. Oh, yeah. So, all right. So you're living in, Brooklyn. Your parents are blue collar, very close-knit family. And your father, that is so great that your father was a singer.
He loved the arts. He was like one of the type of guys that just loved the arts, and how it really kind of flowed through me and how I found out my niche is obviously always playing music and 50s doo-wop songs throughout the house.
Right.
But he did a lot of things in the Catholic community, in our Catholic church. I went to Catholic school, so they didn't have any drama programs or anything like that. And he did that in college. So he wanted to raise money for the church. So what he was doing is he would put on plays. He would sometimes even write scripts or original plays and have things at night down underneath where the church was underneath. They had a stage and everything.
Right.
In the, whatever the hell it was called. But anyway, they did that. And basically that's kind of had a love for acting and singing and everything else and always wanted to do something like that.
So do you think your father is half gay?
There's possibility. My sister is actually gay. Well, she's half.
I love
we don't know.
It.
We don't
she
know
gets
which.
Gay Janine! Woo! Go Janine.
She was married. She adopted a little boy. Finally realized that that's not 100% exactly who she is. And obviously her and her ex-husband are actually really cool together and everything else. I've not really talked a lot about this, but it's for me, I'm like, cool. As long as whatever freaking
makes you happy. I love that about you.
No, she don't give a shit. She's very, very, outspoken, my sister.
Good.
I would say she don't give a shit about anything. She
it's
will tell
so
you like
hard,
it is.
It's so hard though. Like the Catholic Church. I mean, the Jews are bad, but they're very. The whole thing of the Jews being heal the world and every
Right.
You have to, like, it's more, it's political in a way. And the Catholic Church is so, sorry, this is it. Blah, this blah, is blah. It.
Nothing else. No, can't.
Yeah. And so it's so hard for my Catholic gay friends to get over. Really? I mean.
Yeah. I mean, even my best friend Richie, I've known since kindergarten. I've known him from Brooklyn, New York. It took him a while to come out because his mother was, you know, brought up full, pretty much fresh off the boat, actually.
Right.
Full on Italian.
Right.
She basically told me and my buddy Carmine, who, again, the three of us have known each other, still hang out.
Right.
Always. He was nervous for a few years to tell me that he was gay. But the funniest part was, is he would go to a restaurant one day and he's like, hey, man, he goes, how's everything? I'm like, everything's good. He goes, my friend that you met, you know, last, you know, a couple of weeks ago when you were in town. I'm like, yeah. He goes, well, he's not really my friend. He's like, this is my, it's like my friend. I'm like, your boyfriend? He's like, well, yeah. I said, okay, so.
Oh, I love you.
So he looked at me. He's like, what, you're not mad? I'm like, why the, first of all, why the
right,
hell would
why would you be mad?
I said, I love you. I don't love you. It's a big difference.
Right. I don't want my penis near you.
Yes, exactly. Right. We're not going to touch swords, but I'm going to give you a hug and kiss you and love you. You know what I'm saying? We're not crossing swords. We're not crossing streams. But for him, you know, it was very hard to tell his mother. And when he told his mother, it was like one of those things where she called us up going, literally, she's going, Richie, you gotta get a Richie out of the cult. Joey, you don't understand.
It's a cult?
She thought that he was in a cult. So I laughed. It was like, friend, you can't pick who you love. You choose who you love. It doesn't like just out of nowhere, you take a coin and you toss and go, I like heads or I want tails. You know,
you don't do that.
You know, you just you love who you love and that's it. So it's like, finally, of course, his mom came around. His husband now, who he's married to, obviously his family was open arms and everything else. Right. So it's really cool. And then the same flip side with Lance, too. Lance was another one.
Right. I know. That's what I was thinking. I was like, you know, and the more I read about you and the fact, like, you're such an...
I am the gayest straight man ever.
I know, but you're such a good guy. Like, you're a fucking... Like, you're not...
I try.
I know, but it's like you live it. You're not like
people don't understand that.
Asshole. Yeah, right. You know what I mean.
People don't understand that. Like when they see me, they're like, "Oh my god, you're really you." Like I'm like, "Yeah, no shit. What am I supposed to be?" Hey,
right?
No, yeah. It's you know when I'm turning on the cheese in the sense of television,
right.
But you know I'm not being so cheesy that it's completely fake and it's a facade. You know what I mean? Right. I'm not fooling anyone in that shit.
Right.
So, see what you get.
Do you, all right, so you grow up, you have like a normal-ish
childhood. We moved to Florida in 1990, when I was about 13 years old.
Right, but before that, it was just like
Catholic
regular
school.
Brooklyn Catholic.
Yep, singing, trying to sing like little things here and there in plays. I actually
Were
tried
you
to
popular?
I was a schmoozer a little bit with the ladies, I will say, even at a young age.
You'd be such a charmer. Like,
I was that little typical Guido Guinea, you know, running around Brooklyn, trying to get hugs and kisses from all the chicks. But I did learn over the years, because I hung out, actually for me, I hung out with a lot of women. I don't know why, I just did. Down the street from me, even though I went to a Catholic school, there was another girl that went to public school, and then the other girl, another friend of mine, Sabrina, that went to Catholic school, but we all hung out. And I must have hung out with them for 4 or 5 years, just girls. Never hung out with dudes. I don't know why.
You know what's
never...
amazing about that? Because people always ask me, because I'm a les, you know, and I have two straight sons, like, what do you think the difference is? And I'm like, they have female best friends. Like, they know how to be friends.
They know how to talk to women. They know how to actually have respect and not be a douche.
Right, and be like, and have like a bet, like they're not all just objects for you to eventually fuck or think about while you're masturbating. Okay.
Right.
And it's there's not a lot of guys who know how to have a platonic relationship.
No, it's true. And you know what's so funny? I think as you, and especially for me, as you get older, you know that there's more and more like that too. I mean, of course, when you're young, your hormones are going fucking crazy and you're a hornball.
Right.
But as you get older, you know, I start to realize the same thing where I've always it's weird at an early age. And then, you know, for me, I guess, I don't know, coming even to an older age, I have a lot more women friends than I do guy friends.
Right.
I think just because they're
because guys
seem
are
to be
assholes.
A lot more loyal.
And they're smarter. So
they're smarter. They give good advice. I will say that. Some guys are fucking dumb.
Oh, please. Dumb fucks. Advice.
I love our new sponsor, Fast Growing Trees. It is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers, of which I am one of them. They have everything you want, really, seriously, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. And I know you're thinking, Judy, you live in an apartment in New York City. What's with the fast-growing trees? Well, let me tell you something. You don't need to have a yard or a lot of space. You can grow lemon, avocado, olive, or fig trees inside your home. And guess what I have? A fig tree in my office, and I fucking love it. I love it. Hi, Avi. His name is Avi. And I love him, and he brightens up. It makes me so happy. And I talk to him. Okay, I know I'm going overboard, but having plant life in your house is so comforting. And I love fast-growing trees. Thank you for this beautiful fig tree. They have a 30-day alive and thrive guarantee. They offer free plant consultation forever. Okay. And I just got a new pot for Avi. So I'm going to be calling them and asking them the correct way to put it in there. You will find the perfect thing for your climate, for your space, for your aesthetic needs. It's great. I love it. I have a plant and it's so, I'm telling you, it has made me much happier. And you know how happy I am. Anyway, this spring, which is, you know, spring is, it is the growing season. This spring, Fast Growing Trees has the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout, JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using code JUDYGOLD at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. You're welcome.
You guys move to Florida when you're 13. Mm-hmm. How come you move to Florida?
My parents always wanted to move. My mom always wanted to move to Florida. We visited a bunch of times. My grandparents at the time, before they passed, they moved down south over to like Jupiter area, Florida.
Oh, wait. So people from Brooklyn got older and moved to Florida?
Shocking, right? Shocking.
Okay.
That's especially around Boca and yeah. All those places too.
Yeah. So you would visit them and then
we visit them. We went to Disney. My mother loved it so much. My dad one time had some sort of injury where he basically sued a company, got a little bit of money and was able to move us out of Brooklyn. And that's right. Kind of how it happened. We actually
did
moved.
You feel like growing up in Brooklyn when you did, which, you know, it's not the Brooklyn. Have you been back to Brooklyn since?
Yes.
It's night and day, right?
It's great. Well, I know the whole thing, but Williamsburg went from like shit to chic, basically. Right. A lot more now has changed. I know it's a lot more as far as even Italians, but a lot more Russian. Even some friends of mine that are Russian from Dance with the Stars are actually living in Brooklyn now. They live there. So it's like Italian, Jewish, Russian now. It's a whole kind of melting pot. It's smaller. It seems and feels a lot smaller.
Right.
When you go back, because, you know, obviously you were small and now I'm like a big fat juice. So it's like, wow, it's pretty cool to see. You know, I always go, every time I go to Brooklyn, I have to go to L&B's Bomarty Gardens to stop by, get pizza every time. Or I'll go to Coney Island. So
do you feel like you still have a lot of Brooklyn in you? Because I do.
I feel like I do. It comes out. And some people even say it, like a certain words I'll say or something like that will come out. And I'm like, what is that? Or is it, you know, when people say Mario, is it Mario or Mario? Mario.
Mario.
Yeah, exactly. People are like, no, it's Mario. I'm like, no, it's not.
It's not Mario. That's Mario. A fucking... All right, Mario. Okay, so moving at 13 is not easy for anyone.
No, nervous.
You know, so you get there. Are you in a house now? Like your own house?
We were in a house, yep. Living in a house. First time ever being in our own actual house. Nobody above us, nobody below us.
Right.
You know, living there was just, I actually stayed in my house the first summertime because I didn't know anybody. And I was waiting for the school year, obviously, to get into eighth grade, into the middle school, because I didn't know anybody. I had no friends, didn't talk to anybody. So getting to the middle school and then finally meeting friends. And then there were things like chorus class and drama. And that's where I started to really start taking shape of what I really wanted to do, I guess.
Right.
You know, but it was that kind of thing. And then going into high school was like, okay.
So were you like, really popular in high school? That's a big question.
Not hugely popular. I mean, in the drama program, I think I was. There was a core.
You were the only straight one in the drama program?
No, there was a lot of, you know, believe it or not, there was a lot of straight dudes in the drama class, shockingly enough. For some reason that year, there was a barrage. There was obviously a couple of gay ones. There was one gentleman I know, Jared, a good friend of mine, who was
Jewish?
In the dance classes.
Jared.
Sorry?
Was Jared Jewish?
I think, I don't know if he was Jewish. Probably was. I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't. I just ring the bell anyway. He probably was. But, you know, we all knew he was gay, but it was around the time where people were
You can't.
Yeah, it was not good at that time. So, I mean, but we all, again, we were in drama. Nobody gave a shit.
Right.
You know,
right.
You had a, in drama, you come out of your comfort zone. You have to be like, you know, all over each other kind of person.
Right.
Of being there. So, again, for me, I wasn't like the popular kid, like I said, but I was known per se. As my senior year, yes, we were. I was with a group of three other guys, and we were called the Big Guys, which was myself, my buddy Eric Garbus, his kid Joel Herman, and Luis Fonsi, who is now the kid called Luis Fonsi, who sings Despacito. You know, the Spanish song?
Yeah.
So I've known him since middle school. So we grew up together singing an a cappella group from ninth grade all the way till 12th grade. So we were together for 4 years.
Wow.
Crazy. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's kind of how I learned my acting chops and shit.
And you met your manager when you were 17.
Yes. When I worked at Universal Studios, I started working over there when I was still in high school. And
what did you do? Like, you were in shows, right?
It was called the Beetlejuice Graveyard.
And you played Wolfie.
Was a hairy Wolfie guy and sang and danced. Yeah.
And you had five shows a day, and they were 20 minutes each.
Yep. Continuous every day, Monday through Friday when I was not in school. Weekends I was doing it, and you know, sometimes you pull like an 8-show day if you did it, you got overtime.
But, I was going to ask you about your work ethic later, but that is such, the fact that you would want to do that.
It's a great learning tool. It's great for the repetition of things that were to come. I think it was a great practice and learning tool for things, you know. And I think a great, like I said, a great kind of, oh shit, my phone just went caca. Look at that. It went limp. Look at that shit. How did that happen? It was like my dick. It just went limp.
Mine too. Okay.
So, you know, going there and singing there, I think, like, again, it was like one of those things where it's like, okay, here's the rehearsal. Learn this chorus. Learn these songs. Now we're going to do choreography. And it was like thrown at me pretty quickly.
But you were never like, oh my God, I want to go hang out with my friends. Oh my God, I want to go
It was more or less, even when I did drama stuff in high school, I was always with my friends during the rehearsals.
Right.
And we were there for hours, you know. And then I go to work, and those were my work friends. And they were obviously 18, 21 years old, a lot older than I was. So obviously I hung out with a little bit of older crowd every now and then, which is fine.
So were your parents like all in with this stuff or?
My dad definitely was. I mean, he loved the arts. He was always into singing and dancing and stuff like that. So I was always like, hey, you know what? I'd love to do more of this. And he's just like, my dad literally was like, run with it. If you can do it, Joe, do it. You know, it's that kind of thing. He was always supportive of it, no matter what happens. You know, even when I signed a deal and literally signed a contract and we were going to go to Germany, my dad goes, you're 19 years old. What do you have to lose?
Right, exactly.
What do you have to, you have nothing.
I love him.
Go. Good luck. I wish the best. I hope you don't fall on your face. And if you do, I'll hope you pick you back up, you know.
Oh my God, I love him.
Yeah, he's great.
What were your brother and sister doing during this time?
My brother was working at Universal as well in tech. And my sister at times worked at Universal, but she also owned like she still does it though, a karaoke.
I love that
thing. She does karaoke shit. So,
I mean, it must be hard to be your older siblings. Anyway,
you know, she'll always tell you she's the one with all the talent, and I got lucky. I stepped in shit. Is what she tells
me. Okay, I'm gonna have to talk to her because she's in my club. Anyway, so you're 18.
Mm-hmm.
Summer of '95.
Yep.
Crazy. How does it happen?
The craziest thing of how I met, I was in high school, there was the Mickey Mouse Club shooting in Universal Disney in Orlando. A few of the kids that were on the Mickey Mouse Club, I actually went to high school with. I even auditioned for the Mouse Club, got almost to the top 10, and then never made it for the screen test and all that stuff. Anyway, I'd met JC, I knew Justin, there's a girl named Jen McGill, Tony Luca, who's another one, Kerry Russell, Christina Aguilera, Ryan Gosling. Was in it. So I knew.
Really?
We hung out with all those guys because they shot here in Orlando. So I happened to run. I was singing with the group with the big guys. we obviously dispersed because we were graduating high school. Right around that time, I was trying to find other groups, and I was singing with another group with a buddy of mine, Jason. We were supposed to go out one night to Pleasure Island, which is a dance place over at Disney's, kind of like downtown Disney City Walk, per se.
Right.
As I go down there, Jason doesn't show up, but I run into JC. And when I run into JC from the Mouse Club, I'm saying, hey, man, how's it going? Good to see you. He was with Justin. How's it going? Blah, blah, blah. But then I see him with Chris. Now, Chris worked at Universal Studios. Chris Kirkpatrick worked at Universal Studios in another theme park. Not a theme park, but in Universal, singing doo-wop 50s music. It was a different venue. So I'm like, how do the three of you know each other? And literally, they're like, oh, we're getting a group together, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, well, listen, I'm not a bass singer, because that's what they were looking for. And I was like, you know what? I'm not a bass, I'm a baritone, but I'll put a demo tape and I'll just send it to you if you like it. Cool. If not, no worries about it. Because I knew about Lou Pearlman. I knew about how Backstreet Boys was, you know, rolling into that and all that stuff. Right. Yes, he's Jewish. And dad, yes. And how he was, you know, how he was kind of getting Backstreet Boys together and all that stuff. So we're like, you know what?
So
I said, try it.
So it seems like that Universal, like that it, growing up in Florida and being someone interested in the arts, that's like the High School for Performing Arts in New York.
Yes.
Or the crazy Broadway. Yes. It's like a
it was a magnet program. It became later on, the actual high school did become a magnet program. The crazy thing about it was, is all the people that were in that school, not to necessarily say they were in the magnet program, some were and some weren't, but you had people like Wayne Brady out of that.
I have him written down. Yeah, yeah.
Wayne Brady, DJ Khaled, Luis Fonsi, AJ Brzezinski, who plays baseball, White Sox, Red Sox, Johnny Damon. You have people that, friends of mine, head editor of Conan, which is a guy named by the name of Rob Ash. Another woman, Susan Varga, was a producer of Broadway shows like SpongeBob SquarePants and Musical. Right. And then another friend of mine in New York who's casting named Diane Riley. So majority of these people, all of these, actually another guy that wrote Fresh Off the Boat. He's one of the writers from the TV show.
Wow.
Because it all takes place in Florida.
Right.
So all these people were in the same exact high school, which is crazy.
That's so fucking, what's the name of the high school?
Dr. Phillips.
Dr. Phillips, yeah.
Weird.
It's so fucking crazy because people don't think of Florida that way. But
no,
it really is.
And it's all different things too. You know, even my manager, everybody's gone dispersed in all these different forms of entertainment and they're all from the same high school. It's weird. Very odd.
And your wife also.
Yeah, well, no, she went to Osceola High School. My ex, she was in Kissimmee. I met her, and then she, what the hell was she doing? She was working for Disney as well in characters, and that's how I kind of met her.
Okay.
So yeah, we were together for almost 20 years. About 5 years ago, I guess, got divorced, but we're cool. It's not I was there until I was 16. I was dating her when I was 16. So
I know. I read that, and I was like, oh my god. Oh,
it was crazy.
I was 22 with my
shit.
And 20 years and then whatever. Okay. So you send the demo, you say, and I heard you say you didn't like the demo.
No, I did. You lost that love and feeling and it was absolutely horrible.
You lost that love and feeling.
Horrible. I tried to do like a bass line, you know, you never close your shitty. Horrible.
Really?
Horrible.
You never close your eyes when a blue plebiscite party.
Your lips. And wait, there's no tenderness like before in your fingertips.
I love it.
That's so bad. But yeah, okay. I did a shitty demo and I told him, I said, listen, I did a shitty demo. Why don't you come and let me show you what I do? And I actually told him, come to Universal and watch the Beetlejuice show. And that's where Lou Pearlman watched the Beetlejuice show. Justin and JC, I think, came out, or Justin did, and came and saw the show.
Yeah. No fucking way.
Yeah, it's weird. Crazy, crazy, crazy. And then we sat down. He kind of just had a conversation. Hey, we love you being in the group. We were thinking about some other guy that was going to stay in the group, but they put him out. And then I even got my friend Jason, who didn't want to be in a boy band like that. He wanted to do straight up hip hop R&B. And I'm like, but we're white. So it's not really going to work right now.
Right.
Maybe later on we could do those songs. But as of right now, I don't think that's going to be in our cards. So he bailed. And we found Lance. That's how we got all Lance.
Wow. So are you, like, you're so young and you're like, how fucking confident are you that you're like, listen, my demo wasn't great. Come see me.
I just had balls of steel.
I know.
Yeah, I didn't care. I didn't, you know what, for some reason back then, and even nowadays too, people don't think I'm going to do certain things. Or like when I did Whose Line Is It Anyway? We did like the whole improv thing.
Right.
And, you know, you do the noodle with the spaghetti thing. It was really funny because I was telling my daughter, my older one, about, you know, if she was asking me about a role, my Big Fat Greek Wedding, in the second one, I come out. I'm gay in the second one.
Right.
So she's like, are you going to kiss a dude? I said, if I have to, that's what I have to do. It's the art. It's acting. It's what I do. So when I did Whose Line Is It Anyway with Wayne, one of the guys, they do the thing with the behind the back, and it was the spaghetti, the old school, you know, Lady and the Tramp. Yeah. And I was like, I told my daughter, I go, what I told you about kissing a dude? She's like, yeah. I go, let me show you something real quick. And me and him slurped it up, and I kissed him. And it was really obviously freaking hilarious.
That's
it was funny.
So cute.
So I'm like, you know, you got to be out of your, you got to have fun. You got to be in your, when you're acting or doing shit like that.
You have to be out of your comfort zone.
I had balls of steel. I didn't care. Whatever
it
was,
do it. With your parents, like before you, like, would you go home and say, Ma, Dad, I just sent in a demo. Or were you just like...
No, I talked to them about it. Yeah, they're like, well, how was it? I said, oh, it went out all right. I said, but I think it would be better for them to see what I do. And I was just like, I'm just going to tell them to come. And if they come, they come. If they don't, they don't. So I flat out said, I'm like, dude, the tape is horrible. Come see the show. Just come see what I do.
Hey, everyone. I have a new sponsor and I love them. They're called OneSkin. OneSkin. And what is OneSkin? It is skincare. Skincare that is simple. I guess that's the perfect word. It's simple. It you don't have to put on 18,000 products while you're like dying to get in bed. OneSkin was founded by 4 PhDs dedicated to skin longevity. And this stuff proves you don't need a complicated routine to achieve better skin. Their supplements, they're topical, and they make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without putting all that other shit, I said shit, on your face. And the secret of OneSkin is their OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent, did you like that? Senescent cells, those little cells that contribute to skin aging. And the fewer amount of cells that they're called zombie cells, that means healthier, younger looking skin, fewer wrinkles, fewer lines, reduced age spots, natural barrier. And that is very important, especially now it's spring and summer and you're going to be out in the sun. So, you know, you love your skin, so do something for it. Return it the favor of having skin and treat it nicely. Does that make sense? Well, so I'm very excited about OneSkin and I haven't gotten my product yet, but I am really, really, really looking forward. So I'm going to be giving you an update on my skin, but you should do it with me. For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off their first OneSkin purchase using the code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, when you check out at oneskin.co. That's oneskin.co, and it's oneskin.co. You really, really need to invest in your skin. It's very important. So OneSkin, you're going to do this today. You're going to go to oneskin.co. It is more than skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using code JUDYGOLD at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code JUDYGOLD. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin. You're welcome.
Okay, so then in the very beginning, do you have any idea?
No.
Okay, this is fun and blah, blah, blah.
We had the group. That was it. It was really, like I said, we had the group. We really didn't do much. 2 years we rehearsed the same freaking 4 songs,
like
rehearsing in a warehouse.
How often?
Every fucking day, 4 or 5 days a week. Lou actually put the other guys in a house because they didn't live in Orlando. So when they moved, when they put him there, it was Chris, JC, Justin, and Lance. And I lived I still live with my parents. I was like, you know what? I don't need to live in the house, right. But I'll come. Obviously, I'll be there every day. So every day we'd go over there. We'd do our warm-ups. We'd have vocal warm-ups with a vocal coach. So Luke kind of basically took care of all that and paid. We learned a very valuable word called recoupable. That was a word that we learned. But we just started rehearsing. After 2 years, we weren't getting shit. And what happened was is Lou teamed up with Johnny Wright, which obviously Johnny was managing the Backstreet Boys, and they were doing very well in Europe. When Jive, BMG, the record company, Backstreet Boys left BMG to go to Jive. BMG record label didn't have another boy band. It was very popular in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland, because in the States, it was all grunge. It was Nirvana. Right, it was all that stuff. So that's around 94, 95, 96-ish. Right. We had two German representatives from the record company come into Orlando, an American guy come in from the RCA, which was the sister company of BMG, and they all came and saw us perform in this warehouse of 95-degree weather in Orlando. They liked it. They saw it. We went to Disney. We took them around Disney, went around the parks. We came back. One guy, the American guy, said, you need to get rid of Lance and put in a black guy in there, first of all. And second of all, he's like, it may not never work. It may work because they wanted to, I think he wanted us to be like a Color Me Bad, to where it was a couple of white guys and black guys and have it mixed. But it was like, it was nothing wrong with that, but it's like, we like our sound. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
So we're not
doing that. So he kind of left. The two German guys obviously were a little bit
Does
in a rough.
Does Lance know this?
Lance, know what? About him being,
Lance, yeah.
We told him flat out. No, we were honest with everybody. Like, dude, they want to kick you out and put somebody else in. We're like, hell no, that ain't happening.
Like fucking brothers already.
Yeah, we were rehearsing for 2 years straight, living together basically for 2 years.
And did you ever do a gig in those 2 years?
We did a national anthem for a Magic game. We did a national anthem for the Predators game. We got yelled at and told us to go back to church. we were singing. We just did little things here and there. Whatever we could do, wherever we found, we sang. We danced, we sang, we did whatever.
Okay.
So when the German guys came from the record company, they were like, all right, well, we'll let you know in a couple of months. We don't know yet. Obviously, Backstreet left us. We have to really consider this and take a thing. We're like, okay. They left. And literally 1 week after, they called us up and said, hey, we're going to fly you to Germany. We're going to start doing photo shoots. We want to sign you guys. We're going to start recording and do a whole album. I was like, oh, okay.
What?
And that's when it was a big whirlwind and it just started picking up
so
rapidly.
And were you like pinching yourself? Like, is this really happening?
Yeah, it's one of those things where, because you're in a different country, you don't really know the reality of it in a sense. Because of the fact that, you know, you're not seeing TV shows that you're normally used to. You're not on the Jay Leno show. You're not on all these other TV shows.
Right, right, right.
You're on Vet and Das and shows like this that are big shows there, but what the fuck do we know?
And you fly to Germany.
We were stationed in Munich most of the time, but we went to Munich, Berlin, Cologne, you name it, we've been there in a sense.
That's for all the dead Jews.
Yes.
Okay. Wait, so you go to, where do you live?
In Germany.
You live in a hotel?
Basically, we're performing with not even an album yet. We're doing photo shoots. We're doing all this shit, but we really still don't even have an album yet. We're recording the album as we're kind of promoting ourselves, per se.
And are you guys, like, talking, like, what the fuck is going on? Like, what is going on?
Yeah, it's weird. It's odd, you know? And again, we start rolling. I'm like, is this really happening? Like, we're all of a sudden selling out, like, venues, or we were opening up for a big German act that has opened up for Michael Jackson.
Right.
So we're like, this is pretty freaking cool, you know, doing the shit. And it just got better and better. And then finally, when I think Backstreet and Hanson and Spice Girls came into the States, it opened up the door for us to come over. Now, the beauty part about that was we've already been rehearsing for over 3.5 to 4 years, and we were kind of already
ready.
A well-oiled machine.
Right.
So but when we came in, we were ready for a fight, you know what I mean?
So did it feel like, okay, we're big stars in Germany, but who cares kind of thing? Or do you think...
We came back home and we were like, oh my God, you got to see it. There's thousands of fans. And my brother and everybody were like, you ain't famous anywhere. I mean, we don't give a shit. Because again, no social media. No, you don't see any of that shit. Nothing.
Right, but were you feeling like, okay, this is cool, but we're in Germany. Like, were you feeling like...
Oh, it was like a history class for me. It was exciting. Are you kidding me? We the first time, because I think BMG, the record company, wanted to show us off. So they do a whole bunch of showcases with the new artists.
Right.
So we went to South Africa. We went to Greece. We went to
Switzerland.
Yeah. So we started to do all these different like performances in all these different places. I'm like, this is like a history class. So when all my friends were going to college, I was living college. You know what I mean?
Right, of course. I was living which is the only things. Way to learn is to travel. Can you speak German?
Very little. Ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch. Very ein bisschen.
All right.
So yeah, I learned. Well, that's good. I always
it's not my favorite
things.
Language.
No, huh? it's very harsh. Very.
What did you being in Europe at that age? Did you learn? Like, what did you learn about the culture and? Was it?
I learned, well, there's a lot of different things. I mean, again, just in general, from being an Italian to going over to Germany, first of all, not speaking the language, trying right. to do that while even girls are like huge fans, but don't even speak English and how to talk to them.
Right.
You know what I mean? Even like, you like, it's like, hey, you want to hang out? It's like, yeah, we party. I'm like, what is party? Like, what do you mean party? Like drink right. or like, do you go sit on a stool? Do you do a line of blow? What is that? Right. Exactly does that mean? Right. I don't know what party means. You know, so it was learning that barrier. I love the culture. I think it's freaking great. You know, went to Oktoberfest when we were really young just to check it out. But just recently I went back and had a freaking blast and actually drank because, you know, we weren't even 21. Some of us right. weren't even 18, you know, so we weren't really drinking. But again, that it wasn't so much of a culture shock. I think it was just a fascination and amazed how there are actually other people in the world that live differently than what I did.
Right.
You know, I'm on my own little freaking Brooklyn bubble.
Right.
And then
right.
you get out somewhere, you're like, oh shit, there's a lot more other things around here.
And the you history. Know? Like you think that William.
Oh, yeah. American states have yeah. no history at all.
Right.
Anything in Germany. Oh, no. The churches are, you know, thousands and thousands of year old. What do we have? Only a couple of hundred years old, maybe.
Yeah.
For here. So, yeah, it's crazy.
I know. It's really. So, and all right, so you're 18, 19, and you have all girls. I mean, like, what the fuck more could you ask for?
Nothing. You know, well, at that time we weren't making a whole lot of money because Lou was keeping all of it for himself, the cheap bastard.
Piece of shit.
So yeah, exactly. So he did that. So we weren't getting any money yet. But then obviously when things, then I couldn't ask for anything because there was actually money coming in.
So
there was, you know, the popularity, the women.
Right.
It was fun.
So did you have any weird feelings about Lou? Like, were you like, this guy's, or did your parents think,
no, we never, we always thought he was a little oddball. I always thought he was kind of gay in a sense, but I never right. knew any extent if he did or he didn't. I think honestly for me, and I always make the joke, but I think it's true. I was too old. We were too old for what he liked, if that's what he did.
Right.
I never
and
seen
that, they,
I never
there
known
were,
it.
There were, you know, people talking about him being a pedophile and stuff.
Yeah. You know, like I said, the only time that was very odd to me one day is I knocked on his door and he opened up the door in a hotel room, but the door was wide open and there's people around. The dude was just standing there in his underwear. And that was it. I asked him a question and that was it. And the door closed. That is the right. only time that has anything ever in remotely.
Right.
But he wasn't
right.
like, ah, come on in. He didn't say that.
Right.
But it was
right.
like, it was just one of the things. And I know other people, like I said, like Rich Cronin and a couple of people said that he's actually taken a pass at certain people.
Oh.
And I kept saying, well, good. At least I was ugly enough that he didn't hit on me. So I'm good. I'm okay with it.
You're not you know? His type.
No.
Okay. So you come back to New York. Well, you come back to the United States.
Right.
And how long does it take to get to the fucking screaming girls like?
We started doing a few things and nothing was really popping that big yet. But then there was a chance and we say the story and it's the truth. Backstreet Boys got offered to do a show called In Concert on Disney. Disney was doing these different kind of concerts with bands or with groups all around the Disney property. Somebody was performing in the Magic Kingdom in front of the castle. Someone was performing right. in the Mayan Chinese Theater at the Hollywood right. Studios. They turned it down. So Johnny was managing Backstreet. Johnny Wright was managing Backstreet and us and was like, hey, they can't do it because they're very busy and they don't want to do it. But I got another group that's brand new that's dances probably even better and sings maybe even better than Backstreet. So they took a chance on us and basically we did the show and that's kind of what catapulted us. I mean, a lot of people, because it was a great combination and great timing because JC and Justin did the Mickey Mouse Club on the Disney Channel. This was kind of like their homecoming because the show canceled. It's not anymore, but it was one of those things where, you know, a lot of their fan base, and it was hundreds and thousands because
right.
that's when cable really just came out. That's when Disney
right.
Channel just stopped,
right.
started coming. So people were watching the show. So to say, hey, we got two of the guys from the Mickey Mouse Club in a group that are going to be performing in front of the Mayan Shining Theater. Well, a bunch of people came And that's kind of how it started. It really kind of catapulted. And then I think when we first kind of made it per se is when we did Jay Leno. The first time we sat on that couch, and it was the first time we ever performed. Usually you just perform and that's it. It was weird that we performed and then he had us sit on the couch.
Did you know he was going to have you sit on the couch?
Not until that day. That day I didn't know until that day. I was like,
I like it so much better, but I know. Isn't it the best? And you're like, whoa, you know, because
like, look at this.
Johnny Carson. I know you do the little arm over the chair thing, but I like panel so much better than doing stand up on. I mean, because when you're doing stand up on those shows, it's like 4.5 minutes.
You only have like 4.5. That's right. And you got to get the funniest shit out.
Every word, everything, you know, they have to go over it 100 times and it's like all the joy is taken out, but it's so much better conversational.
Right.
You know, when you're conversational on the couch. So after the Jay Leno, what happens?
After Jay Leno, I think one of the other things I remember.
Where are you living?
I was still actually at that point, I think I might've still been living at my parents' house.
Oh,
I was
my never, God, I love you so much.
Because I was too busy to sit down and buy something or do something.
Right.
But then when I had the means, actually, when I was still on the road, my dad was really helping me out. Like help me with the house.
Right.
But the funniest part was, you know, money was coming in. And I was like, this should be fun. And what I decided to do is I was like, I want a couch, but I want every cushion different colors. I bought the stupid shit.
Oh, you were just being an asshole?
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah. So I bought the stupid shit, but it was a small, it wasn't like big. It was like a 3,200 square foot house.
Yeah.
Like crazy. But being, you know, 19, 20 years old, having buying your own house and being able to buy it off in cash basically was kind of a nice thing to do.
And were your parents, you know, like
they were excited. They were just happy. No,
they
were just happy.
They stay in their house.
Yeah, they stay in the house.
Oh,
I bought them when I got really my first really big chunk of money. I pulled up at my mom's work because my mom, we only had one car and she used to drive all of us to work and her too.
Right.
So we were managed, you know, on weekends, she literally, like my sister and my brother, I think worked at SeaWorld where my mother worked at that time in Florida. I worked at Universal at times, at Disney. And then my dad worked for the telephone company, freaking 411, answering fucking phone calls.
Yeah.
So I drive up after SeaWorld and I drive up in a Cadillac and I get out of the car. She goes, what's this? I go, it's yours. She's like, what? You know, cried
almost.
Did
she cry? I love
then
you.
I bought my brother a car and then I bought my sister a car. And it was like, now I don't want, I told him, I looked at everybody, I said, listen, I don't want to hear none of you sons of bitches complain that nobody has a fucking ride anywhere. You all have cars now, so good luck. You know, it was that kind of thing. It was awesome. And then, of course, years later, I bought my dad and my parents a house, and, you know, they live there now, which is great. And, you know, you gotta help. You know, they brought you into this world. You gotta make them feel comfortable.
Oh, please, I know. And they were so supportive of you.
Thank you so much for listening to part one of Kill Me Now with Joey Fatone. That's right. I had Joey Fatone on my podcast because I am cool. Now, if you like the show, make sure to subscribe and leave a review. It helps more people find this amazing podcast. 5 stars only, please. Thank you. Also, if you have not purchased my book, yes, I can say that, When They Come for the Comedians, We're All in Trouble, there is really something wrong with you because you're listening to my podcast. You need my book. And the audiobook was featured in New and Noteworthy in the New York Times Book Review. I was in the New York Times Book Review, people, and my parents are dead, so you need to buy the book or the audiobook. Just lower the volume. People are loving it. I'm telling you, I know you think I'm lying, but people are loving it. I'm going to read you one of the reviews on Amazon. I laughed out loud and learned so much. I'm reading it as a poem. I laughed out loud and learned so much, a perfect book in this uncertain time, both enlightening and highly entertaining. Thank you, Judy Gold. Okay, so you have no excuses. Go and buy it right now. It really would mean a lot to me. So all the order links are on the homepage of my website, judygold.com, JudyGold.com, or wherever books are sold. Okay? Also, you have to make sure that you're following me on Twitter and Instagram for all of my upcoming virtual live, well, how many live events are there, but whatever, and all my dates and everything I'm doing. You can follow me at Judy Gold, at JEWDYGOLD, you know, like Jew Gold, because I'm Jewish. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Please be safe. Please be well. Please wear a mask. Please vote. Please, please, please. I love you all. Thank you so much. And as we always say, So long.
Don't forget to tune in next week to Just Kill Me Now.
Let's just kill me.
Don't forget to turn for part two on Just Kill Me.
No, it's not. It's just
Kill Me.
Now. No,
Judy Gold's Just Kill Me.
Just
Kill Me Now.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.